beats are humming. I can feel what's coming. I say, uh-oh, uh-oh, uh-oh.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The 1991 novel American Psycho by Bret Easton Ellis caused such a stir it was almost not published. The story of a sleek, empty New York investment banker obsessed with status and consumer culture who is secretly a serial killer was just too gory, just too much for some. In the 25 years since, that character, Patrick Bateman, has become a cult icon, a blood-spattered anti-hero, a Tony Soprano or Walter White before his time. There was the 2000 film American Psycho starring Christian Bale, and now it's a Broadway musical. This hour, On Point, song, dance, lots of blood, and how it all plays now. American Psycho, the musical. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Have you read the book, seen the movie, the musical? How does the American Psycho story ring now? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK, or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York is Rupert Gould, director of the new American Psycho, the musical. The show has been playing in previews on Broadway and officially opens tomorrow. Rupert Gould also directed the original 2013-14 London version. He's the artistic director at the Almeida Theater in London. Rupert Gould, welcome to On Point. Wonderful to have you.
Wonderful to be here, Tom.
And with us from New York is Benjamin Walker, star of American Psycho, the musical. He plays serial killer Patrick Bateman, previously starred as Andrew Jackson in the musical Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson, and as Abraham Lincoln in the film Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. Benjamin Walker, welcome to On Point. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Rupert Gould, can you take us back to how this made the leap from book to movie to musical? Who had the idea to put a soundtrack around this?
Well, that's a good question. Our producers are a couple of guys from LA, and Michael Jesse Singer had always loved the book and, like a lot of people, treated it as a sort of cult classic. And I think he knew Bret Easton Ellis, and I guess he looked at the book and said, look, there's a huge amount of music in this novel. Patrick Bateman's obsessed by music, right? Whitney Houston or Huey Lewis, and talks about his music as much as he does about clothes and fashion, and certainly his violence. And so he felt that maybe there was an idea to turn this into a musical that could hit the stage. And I came on board pretty early on. The writers had already just been hired, and I think they initially were kind of skeptical and worried that the whole thing would be kind of campy. But I think all of us who came on board said, let's try and treat this with a bit of fun, but also seriousness, because it's a major work of fiction. And I think the thing that really appealed to Duncan Sheik, who is the composer, who is probably best known for Spring Awakening, the musical, mm-hmm. was the idea of, I think what Duncan said was, you know, why have we had musicals with rock bands, we've had musicals with jazz bands, we've had big band, but electronic music, which has been like a staple of the airwaves for decades now, certainly mm-hmm. since the 80s, hasn't really hit the musical stage before. And he was just very intrigued by putting together a score that was essentially electronic and like contemporary dance music. And so that was the sort of first germ of it.
There was a kind of interim step here for American Psycho that many people may know as well or better in 25 years after the book's publication than the book. The 2000 film, American Psycho, starred Christian Bale as Patrick Bateman, serial killer, Wall Street, glamour guy. Here from the opening scenes.
My name is Patrick Bateman. I'm 27 years old. I believe in taking care of myself, in a balanced diet, and a rigorous exercise routine. In the morning, if my face is a little puffy, I'll put on an ice pack while doing my stomach crunches. I can do 1,000 now.
Christian Bale there from the movie American Psycho. Benjamin Walker stars in American Psycho, the musical. Benjamin, you've played historical figures in some, Andrew Jackson, Abraham Lincoln. This is just the 80s. Did you have to get into a historical presentation frame of mind, or does it feel thoroughly contemporary? Were you trying to study the 80s to figure out how to move and think?
Well, we took it as far as, you know, studying 80s dance, and the fashion is so important to Patrick and, you know, the pop culture of the time. But sadly, I don't know that we've learned very much since the 80s, and we're repeating a lot of the same behaviors and a lot of the same fashion. So the more research we did, the more I felt that it was relevant.
How about you, Rupert? Does it feel retro or does it feel right now?
Well, I mean, that's the big challenge, I think, with everything from the music through to the costuming through to the staging is I think people really are kind of becoming fascinated with the 80s because it's a decade associated with excess and vulgarity in some areas, but also things that we find very amusing and fun still. And in some ways, they're being rehabilitated culturally. And we felt with the production that we wanted to honor that period, as I said, as you would in any kind of historical drama, but also make something that was sort of cool and sleek and spoke to you know, the world today. And in fact, we had this kind of crazy moment a few months ago when we were talking, like, why are we doing this piece now? I mean, what is the urgency of American Psycho in this moment? And we sort of were going back through the novel, and it's littered with these references to Donald Trump, and Donald Trump is like the sort of hero to Patrick Bateman. And
the book itself, Donald Trump makes plenty of appearances there.
Yeah, absolutely. Back in the 80s. I mean, he's a sort of a sort of mythical figure to Bateman, and so we kind of put a few back into the show, and I think, you know, the sort of idea of the American corporate Superman, I guess, is kind of, you know, playing out a little bit in the primaries at the moment, but also is why I think Bateman became such an iconic character. And I think probably the biggest difference for me from, say, the British response to the piece, which was very much a sort of period satire, is that Patrick Bateman as a figure is like a major sort of iconic American anti-hero now. And so although it is an 80s piece, I think it's also a character study, like Willie Loman almost, a kind of big American figure of letters.
Willie Loman with a lot of blood, straight up torture. I mean, the book itself is, and I know there's like issues around blood splattering I'm reading here in the front rows from your performance, but put up against this soundtrack, which is something different. Let's hear a little bit from how it's done now. Here's Benjamin Walker as serial killer Patrick Bateman from the new Broadway show American Psycho the Musical. This song is Common Man. He takes home two prostitutes and tortures them. Music and lyrics by Duncan Sheik.
You should stay calm, remain compliant. I'm probably not your average client. Remember, girls, this is Manhattan. Stay up late, you know things happen. Look at the moon, see it wax. It will hurt less if you relax. Are you excited or afraid? Either way, you will be paid. I am needing so much more. Every pleasure is a bore. I am something other than a common man. I'm not a common man. Are you losing too much blood? Let it flow. Let it flood.
Let it flow. Let it flood. My guest, Benjamin Walker, as Patrick Bateman in American Psycho the Musical. Benjamin, you've swung an axe before, as Abraham Lincoln vampire hunter, bloody Andrew Jackson, no stranger to the violence front. What about the violence in this famous violence in this novel now in a musical? How does it feel to play it?
Well, I think what's interesting about Patrick and his relationship with violence is that it begs the question how much of it is fantasy. And because of that, it can be fantastical on stage, but also the violence becomes a window into how he sees the world and how he expresses his frustration. And so that interested me in some way because it's less about the spectacle of violence or the, you know, romantic aspect of violence. It's about a tool that he uses to try and express himself and vent his fears and insecurities.
I mean, I'm reading Bret Easton Ellis, who wrote just in the last couple of months, suggests, as you do, that Bateman, quoting here, might not be a completely reliable narrator. Perhaps he's a ghost, an idea, summing up the values of that particular decade filtered through Brett's 80s literary sensibility, moneyed, beautifully attired, impossibly groomed and handsome, morally bankrupt, totally isolated and filled with rage. Why, as you read this character, that, you know, as you study into it to play it, What's driving him crazy? Is it the values of the 80s? He can't take them? Or is he the manifestation of those values?
All of the above. Mm-hmm. I think that we can't divorce ourselves from the societies we live in. And society repeats itself. You know, we were talking about the 80s earlier, and there's a great bit in the play where I mention how obsessed I am with my Walkman. Mm. It has auto-reverse continuous play, and it gets a consistent laugh every night. And it's fun for us to look back and laugh at those things. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when the new iPhone comes out, there'll be people lined around the block for days. And we continue to need to hear these stories about the almost zeitgeist of the time. And I think that Bateman is, you know, a manifestation of the 80s.
A manifestation. Rupert, how do you read the reason that he goes to these bloody lengths to, I don't know, deal with, live through, fantasize through the 80s?
I think on one level it is political satire and that, yes, it is about the fetishization of objects and sort of materialism and Brett is kind of creating a...
Restaurant meals of, and fancy labels,
like
designer
sort of,
labels.
Self, you know, as the sort of capitalist monster that eats itself. But I think for me, that would only take you so far. That would create something kind of quite chilly as an evening of drama. And, you know, I'm more interested in the violence as a metaphor for escape from everyday life. And I think we all feel that in different ways.
Rupert Gould directs the new Broadway performance of American Psycho. The musical opens tomorrow on Broadway. Benjamin Walker stars in American Psycho, the musical. You can join us this hour. Do you remember when the world was up in arms about Bret Easton Ellis' bloody book, the violence, the misogyny, the Gucci-wrapped torture? Are we a different culture now? More inured to violence? More at home with the first-person shooter perspective? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK, talking American Psycho. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Brooke, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about American Psycho on Broadway, the Bret Easton Ellis novel horror show now brought to bloody life on stage in New York. What it shows us about surfaces and dark currents in the 1980s, surfaces and maybe dark currents now. Huey Lewis in the news from the show, Hip to Be Square, behind us right here. Rupert Gould is with us. He directs the new Broadway version. Also directed the London presentation of American Psycho on stage to music. Benjamin Walker is with us. He stars as Patrick Bateman, the serial killer Wall Street smoothie of American Psycho. You can join us. Did you read it? Did you put it down? Did you manage to get through? Are we a different culture than the one who rose up, at least part of it, against Bret Easton Ellis' book in 1991, looking back on the 80s? Or after Walter White and Tony Soprano and the sadistic crime plots on TV, are we all more at home with American Psycho now? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Rupert Gould and Benjamin Walker are with us in New York, and Kim is calling from Bethany, Oklahoma. Kim, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Well, I just reread American Psycho last week, and the violence has to be kind of overlooked because there's so much else there. For one thing, I think it's a very funny book, and I'll bet this musical is equally hilarious.
Overlook the violence.
We like to think so.
Rupert and Benjamin are right there with you. You're rereading it. Some people could never get through it the first time. I mean, they're nail-gunning people to the floor and much, much worse, Kim. It's a hoot to you?
It is. Because of the commentary on, I mean, just the clothing, the meals, the Cajun Thai restaurants, the excess.
Everything's over the top. Everything's just a little bit too much. The ostrich loafers and all the rest.
Yes. The $800 gazelle skin wallet. you know, everything.
Bring it on, says Kim in Oklahoma. And I want to get one more. We're going to bring in Dwight Garner from the New York Times book critic there, who's got a very interesting take on what's going on right now with the musical coming up. But let me get one more. Kim, I'm so glad for your call. People still reading American Psycho. Maybe it sounds like you might like it on the stage. Mark in Naugatuck, Connecticut. Mark, you're on.
Oh, hi there. I read the book, saw the movie. I did not like the book, and that's just because I found the satire to be so heavy-handed, and that's why I was perplexed at the character assassination of Bret Easton Ellis by so-called literary critics when it first came out, you know, labeling him a narcissist when clearly Ellis intended him to be this, in my opinion, a walking, talking allegory of everything that was wrong with the 80s, from consumerism to greed to, you know, the customized, you know, calling cards and everything. Everything about that part of it, you know, kind of rang true. But I think Ellis took it over the top, and the director of the movie toned it down a little and toned down the violence and amped up the satire. But I'm still curious as to what you can do to make this guy a human character.
I'll take that to the actor. Benjamin Walker, how do you get humanity across in this guy who's so cool, cold, sort of anticipates 50 Shades of Grey in the popular reading public's mind, maybe. But this guy, it's not just S&M. I mean, he's cutting people to ribbons. How do you make him human?
Well, I mean, it's... Well, humor, first off. I think he's a very funny person. And also,
murderer.
If you imagine... Well, yeah. But also, you know, I can't, as the actor portraying him, it's my job not to judge him. And I cannot not admit that there's a lot of Patrick Bateman in most people. If you could take your internal monologue when you're stuck in traffic, when you're frustrated, when you're alone, when you're frightened... You think horrible things.
I don't typically think about cutting people to pieces. I mean, flipping them off.
Well, sure, but I think most people would probably disagree with you
that there are levels
of frustration, and the difference is, you know, Patrick acts on them, and we have learned to filter them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, things you say to people that are inappropriate in your mind, and I do think we all have that capacity. And yes, of course, Patrick takes it too far, but like Kim was saying, in the lengths that he goes to, you see the absurdity, which kind of relieves the actual violence as itself, and you start to see it as something bigger, which is a commentary, which is how absurdly frustrated and alone he feels.
Takes it too far. Is it true, Rupert, that the theaters had to pay some dry cleaning bills for people splattered with fake blood in the front rows?
We had one staging mishap, yeah, in an early preview, but we've addressed that in the staging. But it's only like strawberry jam. But it's not. I mean, you know, I would want to stress that the you know, the stage doesn't do gore and blood, you know, quite like the movies do anyway. And certainly not like the novel. And I suppose our approach to the violence is much more abstract and kind of metaphorical. And to me, what makes Bateman sympathetic is that he has a secret life. He's just somebody who has a sort of a job by day and a secret life by night. And, you know, we all, you know, have sort of secret fantasies that won't be there sexual or violent, like Ben mentioned, but they could equally be, you know, maybe you want to write a novel. Maybe you're holding down a normal job and you're going home or starting a band or something. And I think that why we as artists all responded to Bateman as a character was, you know, we all know what it feels like to do the other side of the tracks in our job, you know, to kind of maybe rebel a bit and take up something that is more risky and kind of hallucinatory at times. And so to me, thinking of Bateman as a sort of frustrated artist or maybe even someone in denial of their sexuality or something, that's really what I think the book is about. And Bret himself has said that the violence is only a metaphor. It's not an end in itself.
And, of course, it's not just the violence that's over the top, as Dwight Garner reminds us, and he joins us in just a second here. I mean, the restaurant meals they sit down to, just crazy. Eagle, carpaccio, free-range squid, gazpacho with hunks of raw chicken in it, or right down to all the little signifiers of status, at least 80s status. You know, maybe we've got our Instagram feeds now, but they had business cards. Here's a song. This is the London cast. Rupert Gould also directed there, where Patrick Bateman and his male friends compete over who has the nicest business card.
Magnificent, impressive, so thick and yet so light. The lettering, Romalian, the stock, it's eggshell white. Don't take chances in the game, it matters what you've drawn. The question's not what's in a name, but what it's printed on.
Yeah, and the next thing you know, there's blood everywhere. Amanda in Champaign, Illinois. Amanda, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi. It's funny that you're talking to me right after this scene. So in my classes in college, I'm a millennial.
Yeah.
And we studied this movie and this book as a postmodern masterpiece, and especially this scene about the business cards. But I think that as a millennial, in a weird way, it helped me understand my parents and their whole generation a little bit better.
Serial killers?
Yeah, I know it seems crazy, right?
Yeah, maybe, maybe.
If you think about what you just said about him suppressing maybe his sexuality and all these other things, mm-hmm. You know, that's something that my generation is fighting against really hard, mm-hmm. along with, I think, materialism to a certain degree. So it's, in this weird way, this idea of this excessive serial killer definitely made me understand them just a little bit better.
Amanda, wow, that's just, I'd love to hear what your parents have. The American Psycho is a guide to understanding your parents, but or maybe a generation, and I get it. I love that you've called. I want to go to Dwight Garner. He's a book critic for the New York Times. He's written wonderfully about this. A headline on his Times piece recently, "In Hindsight, An American Psycho Looks a Lot Like Us." Dwight Garner in New York, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, it's good to be here.
What a terrific essay you put together on this. I mean, you talk about Patrick Bateman having become a pop, grinning, blood-flecked national gargoyle, almost beloved in a weird way. What's happened over these years? And remind us just how high the uproar was when Bret Easton Ellis first came out with this.
Well, yeah, you know, Tom, the crucial thing to remember is that most of the uproar came about before the book was actually published. Sections of it leaked to magazines like Time and I think Spy magazine.
Yeah.
And of course, these sections were the very worst parts of the book. And if you read the book, the first really horrible scene is about 175 pages in. The book is not a bloodbath by a long shot. So most of this uproar was before the book was published. And once it was published, many critics took it quite seriously indeed, including Norman Mailer in the New York Review of Books.
Mm-hmm. You called it, you remind us, that many people said this was among the most misogynistic books in American literature. Did they just miss the satire, or could both be true?
I think they missed it. I think they weren't. You know, the culture has kind of grown up around Patrick Bateman. I mean, we've developed a sort of taste for characters like this. I mean, you mentioned Tony Soprano and Walter White, and of course there's Hannibal Lecter. Mm-hmm. And we've developed a taste for these barbarous libertines, you know, with their twinkling eyes, and they say something about us.
You put even Lisbeth Salander in there from The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, the avenging, bloody libertine.
Yeah, but there aren't enough of those, are there?
I guess we need more. Do you think it would have a different reception today on Broadway than to those previews of the gory parts of Bret's book?
Do I think this play?
Yeah. I mean, the reception is likely to get. I think I was reading you writing that with first-person video game shooters and all that we've seen since then, we're just not as outraged by violence, even torture anymore. It's sort of part of the currency.
I think that's true. I also think that I saw this production last night and found it very witty and very charming and also with kind of a great deal of gravitas. And I think they do a terrific job of pulling out the wit. And I think they also underline in the musical quite a bit more than the movie does or the book, the fact that this may all be just happening in Patrick Bateman's mind.
Maybe just in his mind. Joseph in Southfield, Michigan. Joseph, you're on the air with Dwight Garner, Benjamin Walker, Rupert Gould. Hi, Joseph.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Well, what do you see?
So I wanted to talk about how the inhumanity of Bateman, I think, is actually very good for the book because it kind of shows what capitalism reduces individuals to, about how it takes away their humanity and makes them just think about the materialistic goods that they can acquire. And additionally, you guys keep talking about this book and how it takes place in the 80s. And I think that it's more of a commentary, not just of the 80s itself, but of capitalism in general, especially how it applies today. How we have 400 people, you know, today that have more wealth than 150 million. I think it shows that capitalism in general is about our excesses and how we like to compete with the Joneses.
Joseph, I appreciate your call. We're looking at American Psycho, the musical, opening tomorrow on Broadway. Rupert Gould, you're directing here and in London. What about the commentary on capitalism and Bret Easton Ellis with a pretty dire sense of where it can take us?
Yes, I mean, the piece absolutely works as a sort of almost Brechtian kind of commentary on capitalism. But, you know, like I said, I think drama, if you put somebody on stage, that it humanizes them in a way that even though the novel has a very interior voice, there's something about seeing a character vulnerable on stage that kind of, I mean, Shakespeare really understood that. And for me, there is a sort of redemptive narrative of sort of through suffering comes truth, almost like a Catholic narrative at the heart of Bateman, or particularly in our musical anyway. Although it is an analysis of a culture and an economic system at some level, it's also a very interior sort of personal journey for Bateman.
Do you feel that? I mean, Dwight writes, Benjamin, you know, he's talking about Bateman as an Exeter and Harvard grad, a gourmand, a tanning enthusiast, a ruthless fashion critic, also consumer of fashion. Is there something redemptive going on? Do you feel that interior pilgrimage as you play this?
I do. I mean, everyone loves. There's a reason we, you know, slow when we go past the car crash. You know that everyone loves the devil's story, and part of what's great about the story is that you get to see his rise and enjoy that, but also see his fall in a healthy and cathartic way. And it's also, along the journey, a lot of fun, very funny, sexy, and entertaining. You know, the devil is probably really charming, sexy, and funny. And that's the kind of creation we're trying to have grace the stage.
Bob in Ann Arbor, Michigan, you're on.
Hi, Tom. I was just wondering if Ben could elaborate on what he meant by the romantic aspect of violence, please. I'll take my call off the air.
Okay. I'd be happy to.
A judging tone awaits you there, Ben. But what do you mean?
Well, I meant in terms of literature and in terms of our play. Of course, there is nothing romantic about actual violence in the world, but this is not a news story. This is art. And it's a musical that's based on a book. And it's not meant to be taken literally. And like Rupert was saying, the violence in the play, most of which is dance, and you know, it may sound politically incorrect, but there is something romantic about that kind of violence in an entertaining musical on Broadway. We're not doing a recitation of the newspaper, which is – there's nothing romantic about that violence. And if I upset that gentleman, I sincerely apologize and thank you for calling to make me elaborate.
Dwight, glorification or exploration here?
Well, you know, it's catharsis. I mean, H.L. Mencken said something, you know, a century ago that, you know, every man must be tempted at times to sort of, you know, spit on his hands and hoist the black flag and start slitting throats, you know. And it doesn't mean that people are going to go about doing it. There's something cathartic about watching a Walter White or a Tony Soprano or a Patrick Bateman. And there's a lot of catharsis in this production, I think.
We saw some maybe earlier versions of that in Anthony Burgess's A Clockwork Orange, you write. Maybe some response to that in Cormac McCarthy's Blood Meridian. Now American Psycho, the musical, takes to Broadway. It's been in preview there, officially opening tomorrow. Its star, Benjamin Walker, is with us right here. He was also in Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson and Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. Rupert Gould directed American Psycho in London, now on Broadway. Dwight Garner, book critic for the New York Times, writes about it marvelously and joins us today. In hindsight, his headline, "An American Psycho Looks a Lot Like Us." You can join us this hour. What about the satire on consumer capitalism here? Are we any less wrapped in labels and consumption? They had business cards. We have Instagram feeds. 800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook, talking American Psycho. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
You want me? You know I can't believe it when I hear that you won't see me. Don't.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking this hour about American Psycho on Broadway, the Bret Easton Ellis novel horror show now brought to life on stage in New York. Behind us here, Don't You Want Me? It's a London cast with Don't You Want Me, originally by the British synth pop group The Human League back in 1981. Star of the new show on Broadway, Benjamin Walker, is with us. Show opens tomorrow. Rupert Gould, directed in London and in New York, with us as well from New York. And Dwight Garner, book critic for the New York Times, who's written marvelously about this. You can join us this hour. How do you know? American Psycho. Did you read it? All of it? See Christian Bale in the movie. See it on stage in London in previews already in New York with Benjamin Walker. What do we learn from American Psycho? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. Here's a little bit where Benjamin Walker, as Patrick Bateman, Wall Street guy, great dresser, gourmand, serial murderer, from the new Broadway show American Psycho the Musical, with This is Not an Exit, the final song of the musical, as Bateman questions his existence. Just a little snippet of it here.
Am I just a version of the end of days? Am I just an effect of a modern phase? Am I just the end point of the grand parade? Should we be afraid?
My guest, Benjamin Walker, in American Psycho, the musical. Dwight Garner, with The Times, you saw it last night. Where do you see this character arriving by the end of the stage musical presentation?
Well, I mean, he's come a long way, at least in his mind, in terms of the things he's done. I mean, you know, Patrick Bateman is interesting because you see Christian Bale in the film and you see Benjamin on stage, and these are these kind of ripped, very, very attractive men and alpha male characters, but really Patrick Bateman is a beta male. I mean, people don't remember his name. He can't get into the restaurants he wants to get into. And a lot of this is about male impotency. It's about a kind of rage that comes up through Patrick Bateman. And, you know, the 80s were this time of a lot of people looking for meaning and not finding it. And he is definitely an embodiment of that.
We read again Bret Easton Ellis saying, talking about, quoting him here from Vanity Fair, the rage I felt over what was being extolled as success. This is in the 80s, what was expected from me and all male members of Gen X, millions of dollars and six-pack abs I poured into the fictional creation of Patrick Bateman. Cliff in Claremore, Oklahoma. Cliff, you're on the air. Thank you for calling. What do you think?
Yes. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that the whole movie and the book was a commentary on the greed, the money, and access and the violence that people use to get to that. It seems like it's money at all costs.
But he's there, you know, by the time we see him. He's made it, and everything else is still a kind of, I don't know, escape or refuge or I'm not sure how to describe it. Cliff, I appreciate your call. Rupert, he's not actually murdering his way to money. He's rolling in money while he murders, right?
Yeah, I mean, the money... Well, the money doesn't give him satisfaction. I mean, what he's struggling to do is to try and feel something in a way. And he knows he should feel something with all his accoutrements and his clothes and his stereo, but he doesn't feel anything. And I think he's looking for a sort of sensual emotional experience, you know, like we might by dancing, for example. Now, he happens to channel it into violence.
Savannah in Boston, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So I have not read the book, but I saw American Psycho when it was in theaters, and I was about 17 at the time.
As a movie,
and
yeah.
I saw the movie, and I loved it. I thought it was hysterical. I thought it was super over the top, and I totally got what commentary it was making. Since then, I'm now 32, and I've been a sex worker for 12 years, and I have revisited the movie, and I'm looking forward to seeing the stage production. But something that I've noticed that I'm acutely aware of as a career sex worker is everything's over the top except for the violence against sex workers. That's something that's portrayed as over the top, but it's actually very real. Sex workers are commonly targeted by serial killers for torture and violence. And in the movie, I'm not sure, the book sounds like it's more gratuitously violent across the board to all civilians. Mm. But in the movie, the violence is exercised as a fantasy against sex workers, and it's permissible, and you can keep getting away with it, which is a real issue. Serial killers can often get away with killing as many sex workers as they like because society doesn't care about sex workers.
Savannah, help us then. Yeah, you say you love the book as a teenager. Now, as a sex worker, it's just too real. Oh, the movie. Excuse me, the movie.
Yeah.
But as an actual sex worker, it's just too real for you. Like, when did you make that turn? Did it take 5 minutes once you got into the biz?
It took a little longer. I got into the biz and I became culturally aware as to what my work as a sex worker meant for me as an individual. And just I became aware of how society views sex workers. And it's a deep discussion. But it wasn't in the movie until Patrick Bateman started killing civilians randomly that I, as a viewer, felt, okay, now he's really gone over the top. Now he's crossed the line. Not until he started killing non-sex workers mm-hmm. that he went across the line. So mm-hmm. I want to pipe up that this is a real issue. This isn't a fantastical over-the-top issue. Sex workers' rights is a contemporary issue in America that I want us to keep talking about.
We hear that. Let me get you on with Benjamin. I mean, Ben, when you're playing this, you've got these murders going on. Are you, as you play this, is your interior dialogue got something different going on when it's sex workers on stage than when it's beyond that realm?
Well, I think she brings up a very interesting point, and thank you for calling in, because I do think that the way Patrick sees the world is the way a lot of society sees the world, which is in this kind of twisted hierarchy, as if some life is more valuable than another. Mm-hmm. Like a homeless man, someone who's struggling to survive and find their place in society, is less valuable than someone who has a portfolio. And the way that he expresses that is so distasteful, even if it's kind of ironically funny, there's something that tastes so bitter and horrible in the audience's mouth that we're hoping that's what they take away, which is that they start to see how he sees the world and maybe then re-examine how we as the audience see the world. Mm. That we walk away and we start to see, oh, I actually do that, and that's like Patrick Bateman, and I can do better. And I can treat people better regardless of how they make a living or what they're struggling with or how they see the world.
Savannah, I really appreciate your call. I mean, it's interesting. The 2000 movie of a version of American Psycho was directed and co-written by a woman, Mary Herron. She talked with Charlie Rose back then about the story and said the condemnation of the book's treatment of women missed, she said, the book's criticism of male behavior.
I remember, when I started reading it, I thought, oh, this is like, early Evelyn Waugh. It's clearly, very black comedy of manners, making fun of a crazy society. And I had sort of mixed feelings, real love-hate feelings for the late 80s. And I thought Brett had caught something about it that no one else had. I think there were things that I thought were crystal clear in the book, that it was a critique of male behavior.
There you go, the director of the movie version, the director of the Broadway version, formally opening tomorrow. Rupert Gould is with us, Benjamin Walker, the star, Dwight Garner, book critic for the New York Times, who just saw it last night. Steve in New Orleans, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. It's kind of funny. I was listening to the guy talking about, like, I guess he was kind of not really getting the whole deal of, like, violence being romanticized. It's kind of funny. It's kind of a misstatement because the Broadway play is a deconstruction of a movie, which is a deconstruction of a book, right?
Yes.
So the whole deal of, like, dance romanticizing it is really the wrong word for it. It's basically a satire of, like, satire. It's probably hilarious. And I'm telling you, I would love to see it locally because I have a feeling I would, like, laugh just as much as I did during the movie as I would during the play. It sounds brilliant. And it's awful that you have to explain a joke to some people like that.
Well, I mean, I get what you mean, and I appreciate your call very much, Steve, from New Orleans. But Dwight Garner, at the same time, we've heard about this for years. This violence is a send-up of violence, or it's a satire on violence, or it's a rebuke of violence. But you can hardly blame some Americans for feeling like, boy, the net effect is that we have so much violence in our culture now and in our media that even when it's satire, it's like, enough already.
No, I hear that. And I think Bret Easton Ellis was aware of that as well, I mean, in writing this book. I mean, and to give him some credit, he did keep the violence to the end parts of the book. And when he does get there, frankly, it's difficult to read. I mean, he really goes all out. And again, that's part of his satire. Having said, you know, we're talking a lot about satire today. I mean, it's a dark book, and it's a dark play, and it's a dark musical. And I say that not as a criticism. It's intense. And there's some repurposing of, for example, some of the music of the 80s, like the Phil Collins song In the Air Tonight. Mm-hmm. And Phil Collins is an object of mockery in the book to some degree, but there's real power in a song like that. And this production brings it out in a kind of different way.
Here's just a little bit, another one. This is True Faith. This is the London cast, back from Benjamin Walker, but back to the London cast. Another hit from the 80s here, True Faith, originally by New Order. Like many 1980s songs, as you're sort of pointing out here, in American Psycho, it sounds poppy and happy, but in the musical has pretty dark lyrics.
I used to think that today would never come. I'd spend my life in the shade of the morning sun. My morning sun is the drug that brings me near to the childhood I lost, replaced by fear.
Bret Easton Ellis, author of the book, writing in Vanity Fair, American Psycho was about what it meant to be a person in a society you disagreed with and what happens when you attempt to accept its values and live with them, even if you know they're wrong. Bill in West Palm Beach, Florida. Bill, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks, Tom. I just wanted to say that I think that there's a dark side in human nature, and that productions like this allow us to live vicariously through these characters, that dark side, and that it also is increasing because of the powerlessness we feel, the average person, in politics, in daily life, corporations that don't care about us, and that dark side is not suppressed as much, and that we're able to identify with that violence more and more.
Bill, I appreciate your call. Rupert Gould, I mean, you're visiting from across the pond, but there has been a lot of talk about anger, rage in America in our political season here. Funny that Donald Trump is a big character in the book, and I assume comes up in the stage of musical as well. But do you feel like you're, in a way, once again, as Bret Easton Ellis said about the 80s, channeling some sense of wrathful response to times then and now with this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that clearly what's going on in America at the moment is people feel that they're not having a voice, certainly in the political narrative, and we live in a time where we have so much sort of discussion through online media and, I guess, shows like this, and yet we feel less and less connected to changing things, to having sort of radical influence. And so certainly Bateman kind of, in some ways, he's almost like a sort of superhero trying to change his own narrative. But I also, you know, because I'm from England, I was on Broadway a few years back with Macbeth, with Patrick Stewart, and, you know, these bloody stories of rise and fall and of pushing the limits of where individual responsibility is within society are pretty timeless, and, you know, they go back to the Greeks and probably before. So it is of this political moment, but I think it also speaks to sort of bigger ideas of ambition and escape.
Anna in Jamaica Plain, you're on. Hi, Anna.
Hi, Tom. I'm calling to respond to an earlier caller's point about how this is funny and people should be able to laugh at it. And I think that this kind of satire, I mean, I came across American Psycho when I was 13. I was definitely too young for it, but what was immediately clear to me is that this violence was not hypothetical in my life as a woman. I work with survivors of domestic violence. I work with people of color. And I think you can laugh at it when you know it'll never happen to you.
But is it laughing at it to, I mean, the artist might say, look, I was trying to show this guy driven around the bend. Some would say that's all actually happened in his mind, but, you know, these are fantasies being played out because he's just been driven mad by a culture he doesn't want to live in, doesn't agree with.
Well, I think that, you know, that's, in some ways, I think that functions as a convenient excuse for people to enjoy the sort of titillation of the violence they see that, you know, I mean, the people that I've actually watched American Psycho before, and the people that I saw really enjoying it were all white men. It seemed fantastical to them that such violence would exist and outrageous, and that was part of the hilarity. But for women who have experienced domestic violence, for...
And it feels like we lost you, but I'll take that fully on board, and we'll just sit with that as we also hear Bret Easton Ellis and the artist with us today describing their intent, their kind of goal in unfolding here. Dwight Garner, how do you think people are going to walk out of the musical? You saw it last night.
Shaken a bit. I actually took my son, who is 18. It's quite an adult musical. Bret Easton Ellis, actually, I read an interview with him yesterday when he said, this probably is not a musical for tourists. And he might be right, and yet that might not be so. I mean, it feels to me as if this musical breaks some ground in terms of what's shown on stage. I used the word catharsis before. I mean, this is an idea responding to the last caller. I mean, this is an idea, this kind of catharsis going back to Greek tragedy. I mean, and you feel, there's almost an operatic sense of tragedy, a kind of Greek sense to this character, that I think you walk out feeling like you've seen something.
You want them, you've been quoted saying, Rupert, that you want people to feel like you do in a Quentin Tarantino movie. Do you think people will get there, Rupert?
I hope so. I mean, you know, there's a lot to enjoy in the show, and there's a lot of life in it. And I think it stays with you, like any ambiguous... it reminds me of Kubrick's films at times, sort of like The Shining or 2001. It's got lots of strange images that take a while to percolate in your brain, and I hope people have a lot to take away from it.
We will soon know exactly how the crowds take on American Psycho, the musical. Benjamin Walker is the star. What a privilege and thrill to have you with us today, Ben. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Rupert Gould, directed in London, directs in New York. Good luck, Rupert. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Tom.
And Dwight Garner, your essay on this for the New York Times, just terrific. Thank you very much for joining us, Dwight.
Thanks, Tom.
We go out with Everybody Wants to Rule the World, London cast of American Psycho. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.